Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts as we start a new week here in the month of February. Great to have you with us. You can join us on A Penny for Your Thoughts today, as you just heard the phone numbers, emails, and texts. We have a Monday morning quarterback show, as we do usually between the football and basketball seasons. And Lauren Tate is with me here from the News Gazette, of course. We'll be here both hours, and I have no clue what to talk about, Lauren.
We have football. We have basketball. We could talk about tennis. We could talk about golf. You name it.
We can cover the waterfront.
Boy,
again.
Everything keeps going. Yeah. This time of year, huh?
That's for sure. And, of course, we just had a great Super Bowl last night.
Baseball is almost ready to report.
That's right.
Can you handle that?
I'm ready for that. I'm excited about that. So we will take your comments and questions today. We'll cover everything today. The City of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia celebrating its first Super Bowl victory, first NFL championship since 1960. The Eagles beat the Patriots. And it's interesting, the Eagles lost their quarterback, what, two-thirds of the way through the season.
Carson Wentz,
who was having a fabulous year. Philadelphia still managed to be the top seed in the NFC. They were the underdogs in all three of their games against Atlanta, Minnesota, and New England, and beat them all.
Shows what we know.
Well, he had time
38 to 7, they beat Minnesota.
Yeah.
And they were underdogs? Okay.
Yeah, that's what everybody said.
Absolutely, they were. And, you know, Minnesota thought they were going to get a play at home. Mm-hmm. The Super Bowl was played in Minneapolis. It would have been great if the Vikings could have got there, but they couldn't get there.
Yeah. Well, based on one of the commercials, the Vikings were trying to get there,
yeah.
And they turned around and left.
Did you see that? When do you think they changed that commercial?
They must have made it ahead of time.
They had 2 weeks to do I guess. It was great.
It was great. So we can talk about commercials. We can talk about the game itself, which was a fantastic game, 41-33. The Eagles win over New England last night in the Super Bowl. Illinois basketball yesterday got off to a good start, just couldn't sustain it.
No, I think we expected Ohio State to make a rally, but we didn't think Illinois was just going to go cold for, 11 and a half minutes? Yeah, they didn't have a point.
Almost 12 minutes, between the end of the first half and the start of the second.
Yeah. They really went dead. And they had almost as many turnovers as they had missed shots. I think they went 0-for-9, and I noticed at the half they had 8 turnovers. Just fell apart.
Cade Bates-Diop, the player of the year in the Big Ten?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Mm-hmm. I think he's having a better year than Bridges. It's interesting how Murphy has lost a lot of momentum, and he's not even considered one of the top 5 players anymore for Minnesota, yet he still had a really great year.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they collapsed after they lost some key players.
And somebody from Purdue you would think would be in the running, one or two of their players.
But they're pushing the Edwards boys, but mm-hmm. I mean, they're good players. But, you know, the thing about Purdue, Brian, is that each guy helps the other. I mean, the fact that they have a postman, you know, he doesn't always score big. Last game he only had 2 field goals. But some games he gets 20. You know, sometimes if you don't double him, he can give you trouble. And that's Isaacs. And then they got, they were pushing Mathias early this year. He was a great defensive player, the best defensive player in the league. And then he was scoring. And the thing that I see with the Edwards, that is the forward, as opposed to Carson Edwards, the guard, he takes advantage of, let's put it this way. If you're at Wisconsin, your name is Haas.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is geared to stopping you.
Ethan Happ. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
They're not geared to stopping Edwards at Purdue the way they are with – I think that, for instance, I think Happ is a better player. Mm-hmm. But he's on a team that's losing, and maybe I'm wrong. But it just looks to me like the balance of Purdue, and now we're all trying to say, who's the best? And I'm not sure.
Well, we're going to see that Wisconsin team on Thursday night, Illinois and the Wisconsin Badgers at 8 o'clock. We're also going to, as we review everything from the weekend, you can join us, 356-9397. Text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, and email us talk@wdws.com. Coming up tonight, News Gazette Sports Page at 5. They've got Brad Dancer and Mike Small there. We'll have the Brad Underwood Show tonight, 7 to 8, so a full day of sports activity amidst everything else here on DWS. And where was Lauren Tate 25 years ago yesterday?
Yelling.
We may relive that moment, too, somewhere along the way today as well, the Andy Kaufman shot. We'll do all of that on a busy Monday morning quarterback show on Penny for Your Thoughts after this opening timeout. Welcome back to the Monday Morning Quarterback Show. What's on your mind today? Did you enjoy the Super Bowl? That was a great ball game. A lot of people over the years, we had many years where the games were not any good. It was all about the commercials. But that was a fantastic game start to finish.
I have never seen a football game at that level in which the coach had so much. I mean, it was obvious that the coach had so much to do with it. Now, I'm sure coaches have a lot to do with every game, obviously, but when he decided on two occasions to run plays instead of kicking, I thought he's aware that if you kick the ball back to Brady in the middle of this game, if he has to go 80 yards or 50 yards, it doesn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to score either way, it looked like.
You had the sense during the game that the Eagles need to keep scoring.
Absolutely.
If they don't keep scoring, they're going to be in trouble.
That was Atlanta's problem last year when they had that 28-3 lead. They quit scoring. I mean, they quit passing the ball. They started running. You know what he did? He did run the ball the last time. He ran three times, and he gave the ball back to Brady with a chance to tie the game. He needed 8 points. The last time, I thought, I wouldn't be surprised if Brady did it, but they stopped him that time.
He almost did.
He didn't have any timeouts, so he ran out of time.
That's right. 356-9397. You can join us. Your thoughts on the Super Bowl, some of the calls made during the ball game. You can certainly comment on that. Illinois game yesterday. Illinois had a 15-point lead, 30-15, then didn't score for 12 minutes, wound up fighting their way back in front, wind up with a tie ball game with about 3.5 minutes to go, but lose to Ohio State yesterday. Your thoughts on any or all of that? You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357, or email us talk@wdws.com. Lauren mentioned a couple of those plays courtesy of NBC last night. Al Michaels on that touchdown pass to the quarterback on fourth and goal. Here's how that sounded.
Fourth and goal. And they're going to snap it, and it's Trey Burton who throws caught. Foles, touchdown.
So that was the Eagles scoring on a quarterback catching a pass.
Nobody is responsible for the quarterback as a receiver. Defensively, nobody's responsible. And Brady was just as wide open on the exact same play, really. Mm-hmm. And the ball was thrown just a little high for him, and he didn't seem like he got up all the way. He didn't jump very much, and the ball went off the top of his fingers.
Well, he's 40 years old, you know.
Well, that's true, but, it looked to me like he could have caught that ball. But what I'm saying is that sometimes that play works and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, it was just as effective the Patriots, except they didn't complete the pass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was open.
He was wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't catch it.
So you still have to complete the ball. And I'm sure they worked on it a lot in practice, and they know that they can do that. But I just thought their play calling was excellent. And by the way, Brian, they averaged 6 yards a carry rushing. They had 160 yards on the ground. Now, that indicates, they had a good balanced attack. While he was throwing, Foles had a great day throwing. They mixed it, and they made some really some runs that really hurt the Patriots.
It was a Corey Clement, the former Badger, right, that was running there very effectively for the Eagles in that game. Foles, by the way, 28 of 43, 373 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, including that 9-yard touchdown catch you just heard, put the Eagles ahead 22-12 just before halftime. Two teams set an NFL record. Combined for 1,151 yards, 613 by the Patriots. The Eagles still had an 8-point lead. And it's interesting because Al Michaels does a great job. This is the final play of the game, courtesy of NBC television. Pretty much down the middle. I mean, this is, TV trying to be fair to both teams, but this is the final play when Brady heaved it towards the end zone, the Hail Mary at the end of the game.
Jam him at the line of scrimmage. I would not let him run freely off this ball.
Brady under pressure, escapes the sack, launching one for the end zone. It's a jump ball, and it's incomplete. And Gronk was there. And and time runs out.
This is the end of the game.
And for the Philadelphia Eagles, the long drought is over. Finally.
And that's a good, solid call by Al Michaels, but this is why I love radio, Lauren. This is the Eagles radio network call at the end of the ball game. Same play.
He's back again. He steps up. He's hit. He stumbles. He is throwing it deep for the end zone, and it is batted around and incomplete. And the game is over. The game is over. The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions. Eagles fans everywhere, this is for you. Let the celebration begin.
Parade on Broad Street. Hey, up the poles. We're going to have a parade.
The Eagles have won the Super Bowl.
Oh, my goodness.
41-33. And, Mike, I'm going to give you my MVP, Nick Foles.
No question about it.
So there you go. A little hometown radio from Merrill Reese, Mike Quick, on the Eagles radio network there last night. So
secretly, nobody knows this. But in the three games, Foles completed 76% of his passes against the Falcons, 78% against the Vikings, and 65% against the Patriots. That's pretty good.
That's why he's going to Disney World. Is that right?
I mean, he just looked good right from the beginning. I mean, every pass was not only completed, but the balls were thrown just where the guys could run with it. I mean, it was perfectly thrown one after another.
All right, any thoughts on the Super Bowl game last night? Give us a call, 356-9397, 3515-357 on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, or you can email us, talk at WDWS.com. Illini basketball yesterday, the Illini with a loss in Columbus to Ohio State, 75-67. It's interesting, Mark Allstork was the top scorer yesterday.
Yeah, he's coming on stronger toward the end of the season. He's hung on there. He's played good defense and kept himself in the games on the defensive side with some rebounding, and he's a tough physical player, but he hadn't been shooting very well and hit some early baskets that got Illinois rolling in that game.
Still like Kipper playing the three.
Oh, yeah, but you see why Underwood has hesitated to play them together. Mm-hmm. Both of them fouled out.
Too many fouls.
And by the way, we haven't mentioned that might have been a big part of the reason why they lost in the last 3 minutes. They weren't there.
Right. And Black just happened to get on the floor with 4 minutes to go and then tried to set a screen out top.
And move, moving
screen.
It's a shame.
And he was gone because Brad had waited long enough to try to get him back in.
See, we've all been, I think all of us have been pushing to see him do this, play them together. But when you play them together and they foul out, I mean, that's the reason he hasn't in the past.
And then you've talked about this many times over the years with me and with Jim and others about Trent Frazier got two fouls, didn't play much in the first half.
Yeah.
Took him a little while to get going. Once he got going, he was a difference maker that got Illinois back in front.
The reason I would say play him is he's not as foul. His tendencies aren't to foul an awful lot, whereas the tendencies of Black are well known and established over the years. But in that game,
I turn your mic a little bit there.
Nichols
there
played 18 minutes, and let's see, Black played 26 minutes. That's a lot of minutes lost where they're not in the ball game.
That's right.
And that's Illinois' best team with those two in.
Let's go to the phones. Alan starts us off on a Monday morning. Hi, Alan.
Morning, guys. Real good football game yesterday. If somebody told me that Brady would throw for 505 yards and New England didn't even have a punt and they lost, I wouldn't believe it. But that's the way it went.
Well, the champions die hard, I can tell you that. I just never believe the game's over until it's actually over with him, especially.
Yeah. The basketball game, our lack of depth in the front court just kills us. We play really good defense, but when we get beat, we have nobody back there to help defend. And when we do, we have to foul somebody, and it gets in foul troubles. And when our big people get in foul trouble or foul out, we have nothing left to rebound. And our biggest problem this this year's team is, you know, 2 minute drive stops. I mean, go 11 minutes without scoring at the end of the first half after looking really great. That's just hard to comprehend.
Yeah, at the same time, I suppose Ohio State's trying to comprehend how Illinois could score 30 while they're getting 15. I mean, the games are all games go in streaks. We watch game after game after game where our team is 10, 12, 14 points down and wins the game. It's just that's the nature of basketball. It's always been the nature of basketball, and we act like we act surprised every day. Every day when I come on the air, I'm supposed to act surprised because somebody rallied. That's what the game is. It's a bunch of young guys who are a little erratic at times. They have weaknesses. They have shortcomings. And sometimes they get hot, and the three-point play will just change the game in a hurry. The Illini hit a couple three-pointers early, and bango, they're off and running.
Well, I'm not surprised that they came back. It's just the manner of the way it happened is what, you know, is a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
One more thing about football, Lauren, is that when they have the signing period this Wednesday, is the newspaper on the next day going to have all the list of all the players like they used to?
Well, I assume we will, but I don't know what the newspaper is going to do. I imagine they will. But we just heard today that Kenyon Sims, a running back from San Diego, and Ezekiel Holmes, a defensive end from Texas, are going to sign, and along with Corin Taylor from Peoria, the quarterback, who might also be a running back. He's such a good runner. But anyway, we know about those three. We expect, what do you think, Brian, 4 or 5 maybe?
I would think so.
Did you hear a Robinson, a quarterback,
well,
Mike?
Well, there's a Robinson, Matthew Robinson, a quarterback. Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know, you mentioned Kenyon Sims.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two that I've seen.
Yeah, well.
Those kids out of California are pretty good.
Well, they're all 3 stars. I mean, everybody Illinois gets is a 3-star practically. We got 3 4-stars, but, you know, we're in a – everybody out when you get past Ohio State and Penn State, everybody else is getting 3-star players mostly. Now I'm exaggerating a little bit, but because I know Michigan will get a 4-star, and you know there'll be a few teams that will pick up a few 4-stars. But basically, the vast majority of players who sign are 3-stars, and we don't know whether they're the top of the 3-stars or the bottom of the 3-stars, and there's a big difference.
Yep.
Because there's so many of them. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys that are 3-stars.
Okay, Alan?
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Good to hear from you. Next up is Carl. Hey, Carl, good morning.
Good morning. I couldn't help but notice that Al Michaels' line was kind of stolen from Pat Hughes when the Cubs won the World Series.
Oh, the drought is over?
Yeah.
Yeah, well. That pretty long drought for the Eagles,
in.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Anyway, that's it. So, did you guys have any trouble making at home last night, or were you pretty well okay?
Well, actually, it wasn't weather or plane issues in the sense of plane trouble. We were delayed 3 hours getting out of Columbus just because there was a pilot issue. The pilot we had either couldn't make it or was already over his time. So they had to bring in another pilot from somewhere else who then had to get situated. So we were supposed to leave, I don't know, an hour after the game was over, and I guess it was over 1-ish.
Everybody, you know, I hear, well, it's only a 45-minute trip. Yeah, well, yeah. It's a lot more than that. You got to get there, and then you got to wait, and then you got to get in line, then you got to be checked, and then you got to finally get on the plane, and sit on the plane, then the plane finally takes off. Then it's 45 minutes.
Right, then it's 45 minutes in the air. But, yeah, we were delayed a couple of hours. Getting out of Columbus.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, there are worse places to be than hanging out in a fancy club with TVs all around for a couple of hours, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay.
All right.
Well, have a good day, guys.
Thank you, Carl. Yep, just didn't get to see the first half of the Super Bowl there. Let's go to Eric. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Good morning. I sat the Super Bowl out, gentlemen.
You sat it out, huh?
How was Netflix?
I've got a Gronkowski jersey up in my closet, and it stays in the closet, too.
How was Netflix, Eric? You said you were going to go Netflix.
Well, my dad didn't get that. I was over there. We had the anti-party, so I made him all the favorites, and it was pretty good. But my uncle was a forward observer in World War II in the Battle of the Bulge, so he earned a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart, so guys like that, just that when the perspective is put together, then it's impossible for me to enjoy football. I miss it, but, you know, I miss ex-girlfriends too, but that's the way it goes.
Well, so some people watch the Puppy Bowl. I heard that going on.
I don't know what that is.
Well, that's another. And the Kitten Bowl.
It's like the Bud Light Bowl against the bottles that slam yeah. against each other. Used to have
something like that, yes.
All right, well, that's all right. All you got. You have a good one.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, Eric did not watch the Super Bowl. All right.
He'll be watching the Winter Olympics starting Friday.
That's Friday. That's right. Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you this morning?
Good. What's going on?
Well, I have a question. You know, I never been a super big sports fan for Illinois football. And there was a game that Illinois played. I can't remember what team. There was 8 seconds to go. And towards the end, they said, well, one official said it was just a two-pointer, and the other one said it was a three-pointer. Now, I'm picking this up, you know, because I've heard this so many times, even with other teams, and I just wonder, without saying that sometimes, I'm not saying just for Illinois, but other teams, there is sometimes officials can be a little bit biased, other favor one team over another. Does it happen?
Oh, I don't think so. I think the goal of every official is to be non-biased. But if you're talking about a shot late in the ball game, I mean, they can always go to the review, in which they do. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible to be biased on a late shot because they're always checked against the clock.
Well, you know, I just consider, but it just seems like that some teams are picked on, and other teams seem like out through, you know, not just Illinois, but there. Sometimes I just feel like officials that they're favoring the other teams. So I don't know if that could be checked into or not.
Yeah, I did. All right. Well, thank you, Bob.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate the call. Now, there's a lot of good officials. Do they make mistakes? Sure. But I don't think anybody goes in with the idea that, hey, we're gonna rob one team of this or that. I mean, some officials are better than others.
Yeah.
You know, do a better job than others.
I don't know how they judge them. I mean, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You can, like a home plate umpire, you can judge him. You can go back later and analyze each pitch and maybe make a judgment. Hey, this guy got 90% right. This guy got 80% right. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how you do that in basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, every block charge is debatable. Mm-hmm. Every one.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that like TV Ted Valentine, who does is a really good official,
yeah.
But do you think he gets swept up in the crowd and the emotion, or is that who he is?
I think he's more likely to go against the home team. They say that officials get swept up by the crowd and the home crowd affects them. I don't think it affects Ted.
Hmm.
I think he's out there to do just the opposite. I do. I think he likes to have the crowd boo him. I think he feels like he's doing his job if they're booing him.
All right, let's take a quick minute or two break here. We'll come back with news headlines on the other side with Michael Kaiser after this.
2424, Tatman's Towing.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357.
Welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. Monday morning quarterbacking. Brian Barnhart with Lauren Tate. Glad you're with us here on this Monday. 356-9397 is on the phones. Here is how you can reach us if you've had an accident. Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair is a full-service collision repair facility. Of course, having a car accident is very serious, no laughing matter. And they are in their 18th year of business. They have repaired 23,000 vehicles plus. And the guys to see there are Dave Miller and Bill Gallo, very passionate about their business. They know the collision repair business inside and out. They've worked all sides of that particular business, so they understand the process. Just give your keys to them after an accident, and they will take care of everything. Free estimates are always offered. You can find them conveniently located in Champaign-Urbana, the attractive building on the south side of I-74 between Neal Street and Prospect exits. Go to GalloMiller.com, one of our sponsors here on Penny for Your Thoughts. We're talking Super Bowl. We're talking Illinois men's basketball. The Illini women lost yesterday to Purdue. They're looking for a Big Ten win. Wrestling got a win. Gymnastics, couple of wins over the weekend over Iowa in both cases. So that was good to see.
Yeah, the wrestlers are a little better than I thought they might be. They're as a team. They've got Isaiah Martinez, who's obviously a national champion contender, but he's already won two championships. Now he's wrestling at 165, and we'll see how he does this year. He lost in the championship match last year, but he'll be going for the third. I don't know how many guys have won three NCAA championships in wrestling.
Yeah, he's not many. He's terrific, and they've won 11 straight matches now at home.
Yep.
At Huff. Has
you know, that was too bad yesterday. The match started at 1 o'clock. It was right when the Illinois basketball game was in. I was going to go, but by the time I got there, the match would be half over, and I just didn't go. Mm-hmm. If he had put it back to 2 o'clock, I would have gone.
Anything on Super Bowl Sunday is tough. But then
there was plenty of time before the Super Bowl, obviously, would start. It didn't really kick off till 5:30.
Let's go to Bob on the phone line with us here today. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure.
On the top of the sports page this morning, they have the picture of Zach Ertz crossing the goal line, and he has the ball in both hands. He's crossing the goal line, and is it different in the pros than in college or high school that if you cross the goal line with the ball in your possession, doesn't crossing the goal line automatically mean it's a touchdown? And they had a big discussion about that, and I didn't understand why he was a runner or he was a receiver when he crossed the goal line. Well,
they determined that he became a runner. Had he been in, let's say he caught the ball in the air and dove over the goal line and came down and lost the ball, then it would be an incompletion.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
This was a pretty clear case. I don't know what they were talking about on TV.
I thought Chris Collinsworth was thinking too much on that. He was overanalyzing.
Way over.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. But they took 5 minutes trying to explain why, if he was a receiver, and Lauren, you're right. It makes sense that if he was a receiver and he fumbled the ball, which he did, but it didn't hit the ground.
He wasn't a receiver anymore.
He wasn't a receiver. Okay, that explains it. Thank you.
Yep, and once you break the plane, you're in.
Once he took those two steps, he was a runner.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And I always thought if you cross the goal line with the ball in your possession and you don't hit with a knee or an elbow or something else first to make you down, that's a touchdown. So anyway, that explains it. Thank you.
Yeah, and
very good.
The ground cannot cause a fumble.
That's right.
If you slam the ball on the ground, it's not a fumble.
Yeah, and if you're a runner, once you break that plane,
it's over.
It's over.
Yep.
That and once they determine that it's a runner, it seemed pretty obvious to me.
It did me too.
Chris Collinsworth, I was like, Chris, what are you doing? You're overthinking this. It seemed pretty obvious, but then again, you know, they're a long ways away, but they have several monitors too. So anyway, I think it went the right way. Bill, hey, how are you?
Good morning. A couple things. On the two-point conversion on the late Eagles touchdown, when they went from two to make a seven-point game, I thought the guy clearly hit the guy before the ball got there.
He did.
But I said I agree with you on the touchdown call. Definitely. He took three steps. I mean, what do they need? The thing I always wonder is, you know, the last play going in the end zone.
I'm sorry.
The Hail Mary.
I practice
this all the time. I don't understand. If I'm the Eagles, you're going to pull a linebacker and you're going to put your corners and safeties in, and that's fine. But those guys are designed for, you know, their size is for quickness so they can keep up with the receiver. Well, you know where the ball's going. I'm going to take one of those backs out, and I'm going to have Alshon Jeffrey back there, who's 6'4", 6'5", can leap out of the building. He's got big hands. I'd rather have him going for the ball than some six-foot guy back there. I don't understand why they just don't put – I'd put some of my own receivers back there.
You could.
Yeah. Of course. No, whoever does it.
The one thing that you never see in a Hail Mary, Brian, is interference. They just don't call it. You know why? Because everybody's interfering with everybody else.
I know.
They're just trying to get position.
It's basically a jump ball, which is what it is.
The thing you got to be alert to is the deflection.
Right.
If that ball deflected right instead of left, number 13, whoever that was.
Was right there.
Was right there. Yeah. He could have caught it, but they deflected the other way.
I'd be interested in knowing the percentage of those Hail Mary passes that were completed that were deflections. I bet it's a very high percentage.
Well, yeah. But I wonder how many actually, what percentage of Hail Marys are completed? One out of how many? One out of 10?
One out of 10, probably.
Yeah. You think?
Maybe if that high.
Those are deflections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, mm-hmm. Thank you.
When you're jumping up like that, it's hard to knock it down. They're all jumping up as mm-hmm. high as they can. I mean, how do you knock it down? Yeah. So the ball is going to be deflected somewhere.
Because the defense is trying to knock it down.
Yeah.
The receivers are trying to go up and get it. And sometimes even when you knock it down, it bounces off of somebody, and then it's...
How would you like to see a Brady two-point play to tie the game?
Yeah.
Huh? Did you think, by the way, this is going way back, and you might not have seen this, Brian, if you missed the early part of the game, but they decided to go, after missing that first extra point, they decided to go for two the next time.
Mm-hmm.
In the very early in the game, I'm thinking, no, just kick the extra point. Go, you know, don't do that. But they tried two and didn't get it, and then it changes the strategy of the game going along. You know, next thing you know, it's a 3-point game. Could have been a 4-point game. You know,
right.
Or whatever. Yeah. All along, it changes the strategy.
Yeah. Once you start doing that 2-point stuff, it starts. You start chasing points.
You do
the rest of the game.
You better get one real quick and get back online because you're going to get further and further behind. But then later they just kicked it. So I don't know.
All right,
well, I'm not going to say that Doug Peterson, the coach, I'm not going to say he did anything wrong.
No.
That's about as great a coaching job as we've seen.
Well, he was aggressive, and he played it right. I mean,
he
to
did.
Beat the Patriots, you have to be aggressive.
He played like an underdog.
Right, which they were.
He respected the fact that if you give that ball back to Brady, he's likely to score. Let's try to mm-hmm. score ourselves.
And I think he was like a backup quarterback in the league.
Was he?
For several years.
Yeah,
and then he went into high school coaching.
Yeah.
And did some things like that and then kind of worked his way up. And he seemed like a really down-to-earth guy. So that was pretty fun to watch. He's much more of a – much more well, of course, this is a low bar, but he's much more personable than Belichick.
Now, by the way, it was only about a month ago, everybody's saying that after this game, Belichick's going to resign, that he's not going to coach him. Did you see that?
There was a week of that. Yeah.
And I never believed it for a minute. But what do you think? Is he going to continue?
Oh, I think he will.
I do, too.
I don't think he'd want to go out like this.
I think Kraft, the owner, basically settled that issue back then. I think he did. But you don't know what Belichick is really thinking because he never tells anybody.
Well, that's right. All right, we have some texts and emails here. He says, if you want to talk about officials that are unfair, look back at the 2005 championship game. I don't know how the Tar Heels won that game. The referees were so unfair. If it wasn't for the exceptional players, they would have lost. The referees were trying to give the game to Illinois, but they didn't allow that to happen. Trying to give the game to the Illini.
Well, the problem in that whole thing was how the officials called the backing in by the big centers, which we've seen mm-hmm. over the years is very hard to call. Who initiates a contact in those situations? The guy with the ball. It isn't the guy defending. He's trying to, he's trying to hold his ground, and he's being displaced. And they've got a rule in the book that says if you are being displaced, it's a foul on the aggressor. But they just didn't call that. They let May back down and score. And, you know, when you do that, you can say the official – it was the way the official – they called the whole tournament that way. I talked to the officials before the game on the sideline, not the ones that were actually working the game, but the one who had worked the previous game and was an extra official, you know, they have on the sideline. I said, how are you going to call this tonight? He said, oh, they're going to watch May on this. They're going to watch – they'll call – no, they call it just like they had called him before. He's allowed to back down.
John Texan says Doug Peterson was the backup to Marino. I knew he was a backup at the NFL.
Okay.
All right, let's see here. The big center for Ohio State pushes and shoves the whole game, not one foul. We're talking about Caleb Wesson.
Sure. That's what they're allowed to do. We see it with Purdue. We see it with every guy that's got a big, strong center. They're allowed to push their way around.
This is on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. It says it's hard to root for fodder. The only difference between Illinois and Murray State is that Illinois gets bigger checks to lose to Big Ten teams. That's a text. From Benny, he said, I had a Super Sunday. Chris Holtman won 20 games in his first year at Ohio State, and no Super Bowl victory for Tom Brady. Go Eagles. And Benny also asked in that text, he says, I could not believe Kansas, Duke, and Kentucky lost on Saturday. And did North Carolina beat Pitt? Yes, Carolina did beat Pitt by about 30.
Yeah, Pitt's really in bad shape. Stallings has got a real problem there. But by the way, it was Missouri that beat Kentucky.
Right.
First time ever. Ever.
Yeah, they were like 0-11 against Kentucky. And they beat him for the first time. And that would be, if Illinois was in a situation where we were looking at NCAA, that would be a quality win, right?
Saturday, for me, was a day lost in my life that I can never get back. You know what I did? I watched basketball all day. I if I'd have had a gun, I'd have shot myself by nightfall. I mean, if you watch about six games. But Missouri, I thought the thing that surprised me about the Missouri-Kentucky game was how bad Kentucky players were. Fundamentally bad. Great individually, but as a team, they're just not, they're not there.
And Kansas is still having issues.
Yeah, they are. They really are. And Oklahoma State earned that victory. They deserved the victory. They outplayed them.
Yeah, they did. Oklahoma State did what Philadelphia did. I mean, they were aggressive from the start, and they never let up. Every time Kansas make a run, you'd think, okay, here they come. And Allen Fieldhouse was in an uproar, and they were yelling and screaming, and then boom, Oklahoma State hit a big shot.
Three losses at home at for home. Kansas this year.
Yeah. Somebody was sharing with me the stat about the coach at Baylor, Scott Drew.
Yeah.
Had before this year, I think the stat coming in is he had lost at Allen Fieldhouse at Baylor more times than Bill Self had at Kansas. I thought that was a pretty good stat. We'll come back with more. Penny, for your thoughts, we will continue here with discussion of the Super Bowl, Illini basketball, a little look back at that yesterday too. And your texts and emails, keep those coming, and phone calls on A Penny for Your Thoughts. Welcome back, Brian Barnhart. We're here with Lauren Tate, Monday morning quarterbacking. Got an email about Lauren's mic, making sure it's in the right spot. We've fixed that, so that's good.
I did move when I was looking something up. I was moved my mouth.
Yes, thank you, Robert. I appreciate that, keeping us in line here. Let's see. This is a text from Matt in Muhammad. He says, Lauren, you're a legend, and thank you for all you do. Please be honest. Do you think Josh Whitman is doing enough to support the Chief?
I don't think that it matters whether you support the Chief or not. He's not coming back, and the people that will love him might as well accept that. Now, Josh has got to, if it's the feeling of the chancellor that Josh Whitman, that the university should be anti-Chief, which they are, then Josh has to go along with that.
Says here, I love Josh, but I feel he grew up in Boilermaker country in West Lafayette. My kids, my brother and I couldn't wait for halftime at the one football game we got to go to each year. Same in basketball. Lots more to say, but I'll listen to your thoughts. And it talks about the liberal push to change our storied history a little bit longer.
What can pro-chief people do? What can you do if you're pro-chief, Brian?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, there's nothing you can do. The Chief is, it's the decision of the university that the Chief is gone.
And from a sports standpoint, the NCAA dictated that.
That's
all
right.
Those years
that is
ago.
Exactly correct.
You know, so that was the actual, when you go back to it, that's what, you know, stopped the Chief, 11 years ago now.
Yeah.
So.
When they tell you that you can't host anything, that reminds me, by the way, of another story that's a little bit different but the same, okay? Chief Wahoo. The Cleveland Indians are dropping Chief Wahoo from their uniforms beginning next year. Why? Because they're allowed to host the All-Star game. If they were going to keep the Chief Wahoo or whatever that thing is called, whatever that big-nosed Indian is called, if they had kept that, they wouldn't be able to host. So when you lose the ability to do something like that, as Illinois would have lost the ability to host in tennis, in various sports, gymnastics, national gymnastics events, when you lose those, you have to make a decision, and the decision is that they don't want to be censored by the NCAA over a period of time over the Chief, so they dropped the Chief.
Says, good morning. Doug Peterson has ice water in his veins, showed the sports world he was not intimidated by the almighty Patriots. Also, he says, I would like to see more from the bigs on the bench of the Illini. I think he is not a rebounding forward. Don't have a name on that one.
Well, what's your favorite lineup?
I like the one that they've been starting the last couple of games.
So you like Finke in there?
Yeah, I do. with Kipper and Black.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's their best lineup. But what about now that Allstark is playing better? That means you can't have Lucas and Fraser in at the same time. I thought Lucas, other than letting the clock run down the one time, I thought he added something to the team defensively, mm-hmm. and was aggressive. I thought he was a factor in the game early.
Mm-hmm.
When at a time, by the way, when Fraser was not. Now, you mentioned that Fraser was out of the game a lot, too.
Well, there was a play. Illinois played really good defense early, wound up with a steal and a slam dunk. This was an early play in this ball game. Kipper Nichols wound up with a finish early in the game.
Illinois back up 13-11. Handling the ball, C.J. Jackson, hounded by Trent Fraser. Now lobs it near mid-court, intercepted by Kipper Nichols with the steal and the flush. Kipper Nichols with the steal thanks to the defense of Trent Fraser. And there's a turnover and a pick six, as they call it.
Yeah.
And that was part of the early success. Illinois offense and defense there together. But as we said earlier, Illinois didn't score for almost 12 minutes until early in the second half.
Fraser, right front court, dribbles out top to Finke, back to Fraser. Right sideline, down below is to Black. Back out top, left wing, Frazier. Drives, kicks, out top, Allstork. Back to Trent, right corner, three is good! Thank you very much. 35-33 as the Illini get back within two, and that ends a, 12-minute drought, basically.
And then Brad Underwood after the game, we talked to him about that first half.
It was a frustrating first half. We do everything right. We move the ball. We share it. We're playing together. And what happens, we make a few threes, and then we fall in love with it. And that's something that we talk about. We talked about it. It was a big part of our pregame is you can't fall in love with it, especially on the road. And we do. And I think we win 19 possessions without a basket. And they forget who LeBron is, and they forget where the paint is, and they don't drive it. And more importantly, then I think we had a stretch where we had three or four turnovers right in a row, and we told our team, it's very hard to dribble drive against this team the first two or three passes. And we got the sequence there where we dribble drove it, and it's turnovers. It's what they do. And then it was fast break points and them getting going, and all of a sudden your lead's gone, and now you're in a dogfight.
And that's what happened yesterday in that first half.
Yeah, you know, I'm interested about Ohio State. Bates Diop is really good, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that he's going to turn pro. He's got another year, I guess, if he wanted to stay. But they're also going to lose two other members of that lineup. How good is Wesson going to be if he doesn't have Bates Diop? I mean, I know he's a good player, mm-hmm. buddy, but he isn't he's pretty much a down-low center.
Right.
And I just don't know. I think that Holtman, maybe I underrate Holtman, but I just think he's got a team that perfectly fits together. They got mm-hmm. Tate, who's a really good player at the four. They've got Bates Diop, who's the best player in the league. Now, when they start to lose some of these guys, I just wonder. By the way, what did Cam Williams do?
I don't know. He was suspended for the game. Yeah.
Well, doesn't sound good.
We'll talk about it next hour. More Super Bowl, Illini Talk, anything you want to visit with us here on WDWS, Champaign-Urbana at 10 o'clock.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk at wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
Welcome back. Penny for Your Thoughts. Rolling along here Monday morning quarterbacking. Always have fun on Monday mornings here visiting with Lauren Tate. And we've taken your phone calls, your emails, and your texts here this morning. We'll have more Penny for Your Thoughts tomorrow. The president of OSF Regional Healthcare and the CEO of OSF Eastern Region with us for a few minutes in the 9 o'clock hour, 10 o'clock open line. Justice Steigman, the return of Justice Steigman on Wednesday. We'll have Reverend Willie Comer on Thursday, and then open line on Friday. David Wood's going to join us for a few minutes, former News Gazette
David
writer
Woods.
Who is covering the Olympics.
Yeah, he can tell you a little bit about Butler, too. He's been covering them, and they just keep on turning out good teams, don't they?
Yes, they do. They're in Indianapolis, so he'll join us on Friday for a few minutes. He'll join us a couple of times during the course of the Olympics because the Olympics start on Friday. We're also getting close to Valentine's Day as you celebrate the special person in your life. Give them the love letter that lives on, an estate plan. Preparing an estate plan ensures your family and your financial goals are met after you're gone. According to a survey from Caring.com, more than half of Americans, 60%, do not have an up-to-date estate plan. Complete a message to your loved ones, no matter your stage in life, from Busey Wealth Management. For more advice on estate planning and other financial topics, you can connect with Busey on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn for hashtag Wealth Wednesday. Busey Wealth Management are here to guide you through the estate planning process, a very important step. Call 1-800-67-BUSEY to discuss your wishes and request a message to my loved ones here. As you think about your loved ones and estate plan, again, get that done through Busey Wealth Management, 1-800-67-BUSEY, or stop by any of their locations for help on anything related to finances like that. All right, lots of texts and emails coming in, 356-9397, the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, and you can email us, talk@wdws.com. Bill texts in. He says there was a deal in the works talking about the chief with the Peoria tribe, but Phyllis Wise put the fix in. That's from Bill talking about the former chancellor. Is the Brad Underwood show taking place tonight at Buffalo Wild Wings in Savoy at 7? It is. That's from Charles, 7 to 8. A text from Mike says, is it time to drop women's basketball and add lacrosse and women's hockey?
Well, I just noticed that they're paying the women's coach $500,000. She's among the top 10 at the university, and they haven't won a Big Ten game yet. But I don't know what we expected with what she has left. And by the way, Boland's having a rough year down at Eastern, too, having left here and left Illinois without much of a team, and now they're having trouble winning there, too.
Yeah, they had a little issue with a portion of something loose in the roof at the State Farm Center that they had to fix. They had to move all the fans yesterday to one side. They were just as a precaution, something they needed to. It wasn't anything, I mean, anything is major, but it wasn't like a – it's just something they needed to fix, and they've been working on that. So they say they should be ready to go with that by Thursday for the Illinois game with Wisconsin at 8. Text from Len. He says, why did Coach not play Frazier and Lucas together yesterday? They weren't on the court together until there were 10 minutes left in the game.
You said that Frazier got – I didn't follow the foul trouble exactly, but he picked up two.
Fairly early, yeah. And missed a lot. Lucas played heavy minutes in the first half.
Yeah.
He says they are the only two on the team that can create on offense, and having only in one at a time puts too much pressure on each of them on defense.
Well, here's the problem. If you're going to play Kipper Nichols at the three, which everybody seems to think that's what we should do with Black at the four, where do you play Allstork? He plays the two. If he plays the two, you can't have the other two point guards in at the same time. Now, you could go small and push everybody down one and play Black at center, I guess, and then play both guards. And that's not a bad lineup. I wouldn't be against that. But the problem with playing Black at the five is then he's going to pick up more fouls trying to guard the other center.
Well, and the other thing you run into right now is Mark Smith and DeMonte Williams are struggling offensively.
Oh,
and so when they're out there together, you lose a little bit of
your scoring
punch.
Boy, when they get a basket, it's just like once every five games or something, it seems like.
And Mark continued. He had a really good play yesterday. They had a backdoor cut attempt, and Mark stepped in and intercepted the pass.
Yeah,
and that's what they've been trying to get him to do on a consistent basis. Len goes on to say, we have to keep Frazier, Nichols, and Black on the court, even if it means going to his own defense.
Well, that's fine, except Nichols and Black fouled out. And Nichols played 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a great idea. It's one that I've been pushing for a long time, but there's a problem with it, the foul problem.
As we saw at the end of the game yesterday.
I mean, they were out early in that ball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the last 4 minutes. I mean, they were out
in the last 6 minutes at least.
Well, yeah. I mean, they were picking up fouls as they went along, and he would take them out and put them back in, and they'd foul.
All right, a quick update on Doug Peterson. I looked him up. Peterson, one caller mentioned that Peterson was a backup to Marino. That is true. One other caller mentioned that Peterson was the backup to Favre, not Marino. Well, he was the backup to both during the course of his career. He started in Miami. He was taken out of college. I think Louisiana Monroe is where he played. Wound up with the Dolphins backing up. He was a second and or third string quarterback both in Miami at the end of Dan Marino's career. and then also with the Packers on a couple of different occasions. He also, get this, talking about the coach now of the Eagles, when he was playing, he signed a three-year, $4.5 million contract with the Eagles in 1999, became the starting quarterback under Andy Reid.
Okay.
And then they drafted Donovan McNabb, and then McNabb eventually took over as the quarterback in Philadelphia. So Peterson did have a few starts here and there. But
you're
going
to have to explain one thing to me that I've never understood. Why is it pronounced Favre when the V is before the R?
I thought we settled that a long time ago. 356-9397 is how you can reach us on the phones. Monday morning quarterbacking today. Illini basketball, of course, yesterday. Battled Ohio State, but lost. They played Wisconsin Thursday night at 8. Illini women lost to Purdue. Men's and women's gymnastics, we mentioned them. Winners over the weekend over Iowa. One at home, one away. Men's tennis seems to have a pretty good team.
Yeah, and they got a great player in Vukic, and they got a who's the number one guy, and maybe will be a contender for National Player of the Year, should be. And they've picked up a couple of young players that are really helping the doubles team, which has been a headache for Illinois for several years.
And those are some of the most important points.
Well, you find you fall behind 0-1 every game, you know, every match in the old days, and they'd battle back and win a lot of them because they're much better in singles. And I had Brad Dancer, who's going to be on the show tonight, and he's also going to be on the Saturday Sports Line this coming Saturday. He explained to me why Illinois was not better in doubles when they were so good in singles. And there were reasons for it, because it's just a little bit different game. A big serve is important. The ability to volley at the net is really important in doubles. And some of his guys are better at standing back and hitting the ball back and forth as opposed to coming to the net. In any case, they're much better. And I think Illinois is really fortunate right now. If you look at it, we got a really good volleyball team. We got a really good golf team. You just mentioned tennis. Mm-hmm. Tennis is going to be a contender for the Big Ten Championship this year. And then you talk about the spring sports, and we get into those. The track team's going to be better than anybody knows. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the baseball team's got like 7 out of 8 positions are set right now. The pitching will be important, but if you're interested in spring sports or late winter sports or spring sports, Illinois is going to be pretty good in all those things.
And
I
softball's
think.
Been to a couple of tournaments.
Softball's
know, in a
go,
row,
yeah, they made the tournament last year. Now, will the pitching be good enough? That pitching is everything in softball, and I don't know if the pitching is going to be good enough.
All right, we're at 10:19. We'll take a quick break here and relive a moment. We'll ask Lauren where he was 25 years ago yesterday after this timeout here on Penny for Your Thoughts. Back on the Monday Morning Quarterback Show, Brian Barnhart here with Lauren Tate, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357 and email us talk@wdws.com. Great article in the News Gazette yesterday. I was in Columbus yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to actually view it physically, but the recalling and all the memories and sidebar stories of the Andy Kaufman shot, and here's what that sounded like on the radio with our friends Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate, 25 years ago.
Get it to Andy. He launches a three. It's good. It's good. Illinois wins. Illinois wins. Illinois wins. Illinois wins. Illinois wins. It's unbelievable. Andy Kaufman. Unbelievable.
That was 25 years ago, February 4th, 1993.
I think we thought it was unbelievable.
Yeah. You guys were going a little crazy there.
Well,
that was fun.
You know, the hatred toward Iowa was so great then that I can't even tell you. Nobody today can understand how much we hated Iowa at that time. I mean, it was really bad.
Yeah, and
they had turned in Deion Thomas
yep.
for agreeing with things that were being said over the telephone when he was apparently half asleep and just. You know, they had Illinois under investigation. They were it was just a terrible time. And the unfortunate thing for Iowa was that Chris Street had died just a few weeks before. A great player for them who was killed in a accident in the snow. It was just outside a hotel, and he was pulling out and got hit broadside. And so there was that aspect to it, and then the shot that preceded the ball that bounced off Deion's shoulder and went in the basket that gave Iowa the lead. And they had the lead when Illinois got the ball back. And the other thing I said to Jim when the play ended, I didn't realize Wheeler had called timeout when he did, because if they didn't put time back on the clock, Illinois didn't have time to do anything. Mm-hmm. But they put a fraction at least back on the clock. And I think it was – now I can't remember, but I think it was 1 point something.
Mm-hmm.
And Wheeler threw the ball down to Kaufman, and Kaufman caught the ball right out of the hands of on the sideline of Dick Nagy. Dick Nagy was right there, the ball. Nagy would have caught the ball if he hadn't, and he took a dribble and turned into the basket. And the thing that surprised me was how close he was. He was only a couple feet outside the line. It was a good open shot, and it wasn't a miracle shot at all. It was a good mm-hmm. three-point shot that he nailed.
And T.J. Wheeler, of course, inbounded the ball. His son is playing down at Unity High School. He's a very good basketball player.
They play Monticello next week from tomorrow. So I'm going to see that one, I think.
That ought to be a good one. And, of course, I think Bob Osmussen goes into great detail on what was designed. It could have gone to Dion. It wound up going to Andy Kaufman. And I guess they ran it in practice a lot. It never worked. And it did in the game. Bill, how are you today?
I'm not too bad. Interesting to hear the nostalgia from the past. My call is about an observation I made during yesterday's game. At just before the 10-minute mark of the first half, Illinois had the ball bringing it down the court, and there was one of those many clock stoppages.
Mm-hmm.
At which time, they went to the sideline, they came back. Illinois then went down the floor and ignored the clock, and it ran out on them. During that stoppage, they had put in dockage. All of a sudden, everything seemed to turn around. Illinois couldn't do anything right. Dockage was in the middle of a lot of events that helped them make a big comeback. That's an observation I made. Do you agree?
I think dockage helped them. I don't know the clock stoppage. That was, I guess, are we talking about Lucas when he let the clock run down?
I think I know what Bill's talking. There was one play where it was after a stoppage or something, and we went to work, and I don't know if we just forgot. Because I know I forgot how much time was on the clock. I looked up, and we never even got a shot.
Right. But that was just one play. And,
right.
You know, 19 consecutive possessions without a basket. 9 missed shots, 8 turnovers. I don't know what happened the other 2 times, but that's, that's unforgivable.
Yeah. Bill, have you noticed, like I have, and everybody has, all the different clock stoppages we've had?
Yeah.
In just about every game.
Northwestern's been having a problem up there at Rosemont, too. I saw that on TV.
I thought one of the referees had control of the clock most of the time.
Yeah, but
he had this on his belt that stops and starts the clock.
Yeah, but sometimes the clock doesn't start. I mean, that's the problem. The problem is an electrical problem or whatever. I mean, something's wrong. Either that or the man at the desk made a mistake.
Battery on the guys that's got the clock started.
Well, it seems to me, guys, I mean, like at the very start of games, we'll get ready to start, and then suddenly it's like, well, what happened? And I'll just have to ask somebody over at DIA how that works. I mean, why are we seeing a lot of that? Not just here, but, I mean, anywhere. It's widespread.
Yep, it is. Anything else?
Okay, Bill, thank you. Appreciate the phone call. 356-9397. We're at 10:27 here on DWS. Penny, for your thoughts, Monday morning quarterbacking, phone calls. You can do it just like Bill did there. You can email us or text us. Castle Heating and Cooling text line 3515357. Super Bowl 52, an instant classic. The earliest Nielsen numbers. They'll have more numbers later, but the Eagles' victory over the Patriots scored a 47.4 overnight rating and a 70 share. In the markets. And while that's a gaudy return, the very preliminary rating is down 2.8% from last year's big game. All told, last year's Patriots comeback win over the Falcons had a 37.1 rating among adults 18 to 49, but a 48.8 household rating among those 56 metered markets. Okay, and I don't know how all this works exactly, but anyway, Super Bowl 52 overnight rating ranked 9th among all Super Bowls. And is the third best of the, I don't know where the rest of my writing went here. But anyway, it's very high. It peaked during the fourth quarter, 52.2, word got around.
Going in, we knew that the numbers were going to be down. But I think anybody that started watching would get caught up in it, particularly as the Eagles went ahead, and you see, well, maybe this time New England can't rally. But they did rally, but they didn't rally enough.
I think a lot of the viewing, too, is you get social media today. People go, hey, are you watching the game? Are you?
Yeah.
You see what's happening just on Facebook and Twitter and everything else. And it's interesting here as we're at 10:28 news headlines coming up. The top 10 metered markets for the Super Bowl. Philadelphia was number two.
Really? Who was number one?
Number one was Buffalo.
Really?
56.4 and a 78 share. Buffalo number one, Philadelphia two, Boston three, which makes sense. But Buffalo had a higher share, top 10 metered markets for the Super Bowl. Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul was four in a tie with Pittsburgh. And then six was Norfolk, Virginia. New Orleans, Providence, Milwaukee. And Kansas City was in a tie for 10th with Seattle. So it's just interesting why Buffalo was number one. The Bills were not in it. They were in the playoffs this year, first time in a while. Text from Rick, will Illinois football move up in the recruiting ranking this Wednesday?
Not much, but I would think that they might move up a little, but other teams are going to be adding players too, and the top teams aren't going to have to add anybody because they've already had most of their players, so I don't think Illinois will move up very much. Plus, three stars don't help you move up, really.
Hmm. Well, if there's a lot of three stars being recruited by everybody, and the ratings sometimes are, I mean, you know, it's all subjective, but in the sense that it's like scoring points. If you have a list of teams that score points, you might average 77 a game and be number one, and number eight is averaging 74, 73. I mean, there's not...
Yeah.
Ratings get jumbled up because there's so many ratings that are close together. Plus, it's subjective.
Subjective, and in some cases, like last year, the players turn out to be better than they were ranked.
Than you would think. And a text here, it says, when and why did women's basketball go to a quarters-style game with the four quarters?
I think part of that is the foul situation where you started with fouls every quarter.
Mm-hmm. And of course, at high school, it's quarters. NBA, it's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And the women's basketball now in college is quarters. The men's game is the only one playing halves. And don't sense they're going to change that, but we'll see. Anyway, those texts in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Michael Kaiser up next with news headlines and then more Monday morning quarterbacking next.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS.
And maybe someday the Bears will win a Super Bowl. Now, some of these historic teams in the NFL have these great songs. You know, the Bear Down, Chicago Bears. Have you heard the Eagles, Fly Eagles Fly? Have you heard that one before?
I don't think so.
Well, here you go. You're gonna.
All right,
you may hear this over the next couple of days. This goes about 30 seconds. Here we go. Fly Eagles Fly for all you Eagles fans. Go. Eagles win the Super Bowl, first Super Bowl title for Philadelphia. A couple of notes on the Super Bowl, just little trivia notes you may or may not know. Did you know that University of Alabama head coach Nick Saban and Bill Belichick have combined for 7 championships in the last 9 years, but they've never won in the same season?
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting. And teams wearing white jerseys have won 12 of the last 13 Super Bowls. But the Patriots wore white on Sunday and lost. So there's a couple of little trivia tidbits for you from the Super Bowl.
Make my day complete.
There you go. And the Super Bowl trophy, Lombardi Trophy, weighs 7 pounds and costs $50,000 to make.
Mm.
And the highest Super Bowl attendance set in 1980, 103,985 at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. The Rams and the Steelers played in that one. So there's some little trivia notes for you left over from the Super Bowl. A text from Bill. He says, the clock problem in college basketball is obviously Russian hacking.
I think it's Trump's fault.
And this text in, it says, on that game 25 years ago, and I think Bob Osmussen mentioned this in the column that he did, said T.J. Wheeler steps over the out-of-bounds line when throwing that long pass. The referee missed the call.
Really?
And I don't know, Bob mentioned it in passing that had they looked at it a little closer back then, maybe he stepped over the line when he threw it. But
well,
I don't know.
I know he got a pick from a set pick by Rennie Clemens mm-hmm. as he ran to his right to throw the ball. I didn't know he stepped over the line.
Well, let's see. I have to read it again. I think he said that if they looked at it closer, Bob said it's a little secret, a little known fact, that he may have stepped over the line. So if they looked at it closer, they might have seen it. But that's what this texter is referring to. And also a text from Sharon. She says, I don't understand how our players cannot know the time on the shot clock. I get the players have a lot to keep track of, but don't we have a manager or player at the end of the bench or an assistant coach that can let them know 10 or 9 seconds left in the shot clock in those possessions that look like they're going nowhere soon?
Well, at home we start counting down.
The crush fan, does. Yeah,
the crush, you know absolutely when they start counting down under when it gets under 10. But on the road, there's nobody's going to help you, that's for sure. In fact, some of the students count down wrong numbers.
Right, miscount. They try to get you to rush the shot.
That's right.
The shot clock violation really steams me, Sharon says, when we don't even get a shot off. So a lot of people would agree with you there. When it's really frustrating when you don't get the shot off in time.
This seemed like there was something about the offense. They just ceased to get the ball inside, and there was an awful lot of passing on the outside with a little penetration for a long period of time in that before halftime. Illinois just wasn't getting much penetration. And either passing or dribbling.
And one thing Brad Underwood talked about is, and you talk about this often, is falling in love with a three-point shot.
Yep.
When you make two or three, then you start, it's like fool's gold. You start thinking that, oh, they're all going to go in, and you get away. And Doug Altenberger mentioned this on the broadcast yesterday in that stretch. And we had some good looks that didn't go in at times.
Absolutely.
But we weren't patient enough to work it inside to Black or to Kipper or whoever was down low enough times in that stretch to get some easier points. And they had worked in the shoot-around on making Caleb Wesson try to guard down low our offense with a lot of the cutting and so forth, and they got away from that in that stretch where they didn't score for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So thought that was interesting. 356-9397, you can join us. We have some open lines at the moment here, 1041. Keep the text coming on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, and you can email us, talk at WDWS.com. A couple of folks I'd like you to reach out to if you are interested in selling or buying a home, our friends Steve and Pam Starwald at Keller Williams. They're a husband and wife team. That's somewhat rare. I mean, some of the teams are great. They're just bigger. This is a husband and wife team selling real estate and helping you with that process. They've assembled an outstanding team to work with them on home inspection and lending. We'll tell you more about that later in the week. Pam, by the way, has completed a training and earned a certificate, making her a senior real estate specialist. So if you're maybe downsizing at this time of your life, that is a way you can go there. Pam can help you, 239-7156. Both Steve and Pam grew up in Champaign-Urbana, graduated locally. They know the area very well. Here's a thought, too. If you're moving out of state and you're looking, you don't know where to go. Say you're moving to Texas and you think, well, where in the world in Texas, what do I do where I'm moving to? How can I get some help? They can help out with out-of-state referrals to agents in that state to meet your specific need and location. If you're wanting to sell your house, you don't know, well, I don't know what my urgency is, 2 weeks, 6 months, a year. Steve and Pam Starwald at Keller Williams can give you a no-cost consultation on that. So whatever it is, selling, home inspection, buying, appraisal process, closings, Steve and Pam Starwald can be with you the entire way. They're the Starwald Group. Steve and Pam, the husband and wife team, give them a call, 239-7156, 217-239-7156. And if they happen to be out with a client, when you call, that number rolls over to Pam's cell phone. So you will get in touch with Pam and or Steve along the way. 239-7156, area code 217. Give them a call, Steve and Pam Starwald at Keller Williams, the husband and wife team. We'll come back with more Monday morning quarterbacking after this on Penny. We're on Penny for your thoughts here on DWS. Glad you're with us. Monday morning quarterbacking today as we look back at a busy weekend for the Fighting Illini men. They play Thursday night at 8 against Wisconsin. Wisconsin, by the way, got beat by Maryland yesterday, 68-63. Wisconsin now is 10-15, 3-9 in the Big Ten. That ends a streak of 17 straight winning seasons in conference play for Wisconsin.
Their last nine games, who is the only team they've beaten?
That would be Illinois up there. And
I thought you could answer that.
It's time to get even with them.
You know, they lost to Rutgers, Nebraska, Purdue, Iowa, Michigan State, Nebraska again, Northwestern, and Maryland.
Now, what in the Northwestern game, what did they get down? 18-1, I think, at one point in that game?
Yeah.
At Madison.
Right. Yeah.
Phone lines are open, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, or email us talk@wdws.com. The Eagles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. That was the big headline story of the day. Meanwhile, an NBA story for you. A person with direct knowledge of the situation says the Cleveland Cavaliers have no plans to fire coach Tyronn Lue, despite the team's recent slide. They had a 32-point home loss to Houston the other night.
They got Thomas back, the young man that they traded for from Boston. And it seems like ever since he's come back, the team has gotten worse. I don't know. I'm not blaming it on him. I don't follow it close enough to know, but they are really struggling. They're going to have a problem winning the Eastern Division, let alone the championship.
Email from Mike. He says, the way college basketball is going this year, don't be surprised to see some 14, 15, or 16-seeded teams making it to the Elite Eight or further this year.
It's going to be a toss-up for a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. I don't know how you – it's going to be hard to pick the teams for the NCAA. A lot of the teams that you expect to be really good are in trouble.
And what happens is those lower, you get down to 15 and 16 seeds, and of course a 16, as we know, has never beaten a 1. But, I mean, you're getting into those teams to make it that far is quite a stretch. If you're a 10, 11, 12, you can make it usually to about the Sweet 16, and then they usually run out of gas.
But usually, yeah.
But you're down to 14, 15, 16. But I don't know if any of those teams are good enough to make it. Probably not.
I mean, as you point out, the problem with getting a low seed is you have to play a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And 16s aren't going to beat ones. Not when the ones are as good as they always are.
And who's going to be the ones, I guess? Purdue?
Purdue and Michigan State are going to be in contention for it, for sure, depending on how they finish. But I think Villanova is and Virginia. You believe Virginia's defense? It's incredible.
Oh, I know. They're not much – I don't know how much fun they are to watch.
Well, if you're a Virginia fan and you're winning games, don't you think you'd enjoy the games?
That's right. 356-9397, phone line open at the moment. Email from John in. He says, what are the chances we make the NIT in men's basketball? You have to win a few games here.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked at that. That's a good question, and you got to finish at least 500, don't you?
I don't know. You mean overall?
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
And now they've gotten more selective too, because those smaller conferences, if you win your conference championship and then lose in your conference tournament, you're in NIT.
Automatically, right.
So that eliminates several spots right there. So you'd have to be above 500 to even be in the talk, I would think. By the way, the show that comes after the Super Bowl, This Is Us, which has been scoring and rating very well. That was the show right after the Super Bowl last night. 16.2 rating, highest post-Super Bowl numbers in several years, in 6 years, and 59% higher for a show after the Super Bowl. Last year it was 24 Legacy. This Is Us, 59% higher. That was the post-game show anyway, or at least after the game show for NBC. 10:51 here at DWS. What's on your mind here as we continue with more Penny for Your Thoughts after this? 10:53, headed for 11 o'clock here on Penny for Your Thoughts. An open line for most of the show tomorrow. Some representatives from OSF will be with us in the first hour for a few minutes, and then we'll have open line the rest of the first hour and then all of the second hour tomorrow on a Penny for Your Thoughts. Right now we're doing some Monday morning quarterbacking, just kind of reliving the Super Bowl a little bit, Big Ten basketball. Purdue and Ohio State play later this week at Mackey Arena.
I think that's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah, Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember which night it is, but
I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball.
Okay.
It's right down your alley.
Yes.
Can the Cubs keep Arrieta? Can the Cardinals keep Lynn? Who's going to get Darvish? Come on, tell me.
Who's going to get Darvish? Yeah, well, didn't the Cubs hire his catcher to a minor league contract?
Well, they're trying to get him,
aren't they? And Arrieta's just kind of bouncing around out there right now, right?
You think there's collusion?
Collusion.
Well, that's what the Players Association says. Yeah. Nobody will sign or play. We only want him to have 7 years, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah, well, between Lynn and Martinez, then who for the Cardinals after that, for those two pitchers?
Lynn's gone.
Yeah, but I'm saying for Martinez then, for the Cardinals, then who else is pitching for the Cardinals these days?
Well, they got Wainwright, and they've got Reyes coming back. I think that at some point he'll be a starter. I mean, they may start him in the bullpen. I don't know what they're going to do with Reyes. Yeah. But I know one thing. I want to see him on the mound because he can make a difference.
Has either one of those teams addressed the pitching issues they faced last year?
The Cubs and Cardinals may each need another pitcher. And, by the way, Milwaukee's going after it, too. We shouldn't overlook Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a real contender with the Cubs. I mean, their outfielders are going to be power-packed, but it just depends on their pitching. All three of them, it depends on their pitching.
So last year, Milwaukee, which led the division for a good part of the year.
Yeah, he certainly did.
Not a fluke.
No, we'll be more alerted to them this year.
Mm-hmm. Also, a little bit of news from Michigan State. Michigan State University faculty moving ahead with a motion to hold a no-confidence vote on the school's Board of Trustees. The vote in response to the board's decision to hire the former governor, John Enger, as the interim president.
If you're on that Board of Trustees, would you want to get out of there?
I mean,
you're working for free for the university, right? You're trying to help, and everybody's calling you names. Where were they all these years?
Yeah. Members of the university's academic congress overwhelmingly approved a measure Saturday to hold the vote at the faculty senate's next meeting. If that vote passes, faculty would call on the trustees to step down immediately. Faculty members say the board rushed to appoint Engler, and they criticized his lack of academic experience.
They act like he must have graduated from the University of Michigan. They don't like him at all, do they?
No. And Mitch Daniels became the president at Purdue, right? The former governor of Indiana, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
Engler was hired as the interim president last Wednesday after the long-term president, Lou Ann Simon, resigned January 24th. Of course, all this is the outcry of the Nassar story. Let's go to Scott at 1056. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Hi. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that story, the Board of Trustees voting no confidence. Is Engler a Republican or something? I don't understand the background. He was a former governor. Why are they objecting so strongly to him?
Yes, he was a former Republican governor.
That's it, then.
Yeah. You think it's just party?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, let's face it, academia, if you're, you know, even remotely considered a conservative, whatever, they will drive you out.
Yeah, Republicans are not allowed on any campus.
Nope. Not to say anything. Anyway, I was curious. Thanks for clearing that up.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. 356-9397. We're at 10:57 here, a couple of minutes to go here on this program. So the Illini, they play Wisconsin, a couple of home games here, Wisconsin and Penn State. Now, Penn State has not been easy to beat. Penn State is right there in that top five or six in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they're athletic as heck.
Because right now it's Purdue, Ohio State. Purdue's 12-0, Ohio State's 11-1. They play each other this week. Michigan State is 10-2. And all three of those teams have, 23, 20, and 22 wins, respectively. Michigan is 8-4. Nebraska's 8-4. And then Penn State, 6-6. Northwestern has won a couple here. They're 5-6. Maryland and Indiana, 5-7. And then Minnesota, which has fallen off the map, they're 3-9. Iowa, 3-9. Wisconsin, 3-9. Illinois, 2-9. And Rutgers, 2-10.
You see anything more than four teams in the NCAA out of the Big Ten?
From what I'm seeing, maybe five with Nebraska, if you throw in Nebraska. And they have the look. I think there's an eye test. They have the look of an NCAA team,
It depends on how they finish, though.
Mm-hmm. They've won 17 games. Penn State's won 16. And I guess the top four in the Big Ten get that double bye in the Big Ten tournament.
In the tournament.
Yeah, and that starts in 23 days. So we're moving right along here very, very quickly. All right. Well, Mr. Tate, we said we'd cover everything. I think we did.
I think we did.
Yes. Thank you again, as always. Good article in the News Gazette yesterday if you want to check out the Andy Kaufman, all the background of that shot, not just the shot itself, but the story leading up to the game, the whole issue with Deion Thomas and everything else.
Bob even talked to Phil Bova, who worked the game.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was official, yeah.
So that's in there, too. So check that out here at News Gazette and News Gazette Media. Okay, more Penny for your thoughts tomorrow. Again, some representatives from OSF will join us in the first hour for a few minutes, and then we'll have an open line the rest of the time. And then Justice Steigman on Wednesday, Willie Comer on Thursday. David Woods will join us for a few minutes Friday, get you ready for the start of the Winter Olympics over there in Korea. And that'll do it for today on Penny for Your Thoughts. Thank you again, all the phone calls, a lot of emails and texts today. Those two lines were busy
really like today those.
And really enjoyed being with Lauren today. Ed Bond has helped us out with a lot of all of his work that he does across the glass. We appreciate him. This is WDWS Champaign-Urbana, 11 o'clock. Have a great Monday.